crap.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah! Ah! Operator, give me the number for 911.
here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's old Shaziz here. Hope you're all doing well out there. I'm a mad science guy, they say, and I've been called just about everything under the sun. But that's all right. Mainstream science seems to kind of agree with craziness, and I'm going to try to play a bit of a quantum theory documentary. And some point in there, I'll jump in there and bring the other mad science guys on there, and we'll try to make a good show for you. So I'm gonna go ahead and try to play this. I'm playing it from one computer to the next, so hopefully y'all get everything adjusted where I'm not blowing your ears out or you can hear everything. And I'll still probably have a live mic going on, so you might hear me shuffling around in the background and that kind of stuff. But either way, I'd like you to hear some of the madness from mainstream science. So here we go.
For thousands of years, we've been trying to unlock the mysteries of how the universe works. And we've done pretty well. Coming up with a set of laws that describes the clear and certain motion of galaxies and stars and planets. But now we know, at a fundamental level, things are a lot more fuzzy. Because we've discovered a revolutionary new set of laws that have completely transformed our picture of the universe. From outer space to the heart of New York City to the microscopic realm, our view of the world has shifted thanks to these strange and mysterious laws that are redefining our understanding of reality. They're the laws of quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics rules over every atom and tiny particle in every piece of matter, in stars and planets, in rocks and buildings, and in you and me. We don't notice the strangeness of quantum mechanics in everyday life, but it's always there if you know where to look. You just have to change your perspective and get down to the tiniest of scales, to the level of atoms and the particles inside them. Down at the quantum level, the laws that govern this tiny realm appear completely different from the familiar laws that govern big, everyday objects. And once you catch a glimpse of them, you never look at the world in quite the same way. It's almost impossible to picture how weird things can get down at the smallest of scales. But what if you could visit a place like this, where the quantum laws were obvious, where people and objects behave like tiny atoms and particles? You'd be in for quite a show. Here, objects do things that seem crazy. I mean, in the quantum world, there's a sense that things aren't going to be tied down to just one location, or to follow just one path. It's almost as if things are in one place at a time.
Hey, we're on live.
Oh, good morning.
And what I do here can have an immediate effect somewhere else. Even...
Welcome to the University of Shocking the Crap Out of Yourself.
So why do we believe these bizarre laws? Well, for over 75 years, we've been using them to make predictions for how atoms and particles should behave. And in experiment after experiment, the quantum laws have always been right.
It's the best theory we have. There are literally billions of pieces of confirming evidence for quantum mechanics.
It has passed so many tests. Well, so many bizarre predictions.
There's no disagreement between quantum mechanics and any experiment that's ever been done.
The quantum laws become most obvious when you get down to tiny scales like atoms. But consider this. I'm made of atoms. So are you. So is everyone.
I don't know. I'm thinking I'm
in the world
right now.
So these weird quantum laws are not just telling us about small things. They're telling us about reality. So how did we discover them? These strange laws that seem to contradict much of what we thought we knew about the universe. Not long ago, we thought we had it pretty much figured out. The the rules that govern how planets orbit the sun. How a ball arcs through the sky. How ripples move across the surface of a pond. These laws were all spelled out in a series of equations called classical mechanics, and they allowed us to predict the behavior of things with certainty. It all seemed to be making perfect sense. Until about 100 years ago, when scientists were struggling to explain some unusual properties of light. In particular, the kind of light that glowed from gases when they were heated in a glass tube. When scientists observed this light through a prism, they saw something they'd never expected.
If you heated up some gas and looked at it through a prism, it formed lines. Not the continuous spectrum that you see projected by a piece of cut glass on your table, but very distinct lines.
It wouldn't give out a smear, kind of complete rainbow of light. It would give out sort of pencil beams of light at very specific colors.
And it was something of a mystery how to understand what was going on.
An explanation for the mysterious lines of color would come from a band of radical scientists who at the beginning of the 20th century were grappling with the fundamental nature of the physical world. And some of the most startling insights came from the mind of Niels Bohr, a physicist who loved to discuss new ideas over ping pong. Bohr was convinced that the solution to the mystery lay at the heart of matter, in the structure of the atom. He thought that atoms resembled tiny solar systems, with even tinier particles called electrons orbiting around a nucleus, much the way the planets orbit around the sun. But Bohr proposed that unlike the solar system, electrons could not move in just any orbit. Instead, only certain orbits were allowed.
And he had a really surprising and completely counter-physical idea, which was that there were definite states, fixed orbits that these electrons could have, and only those orbits.
Bohr said that when an atom was heated, its electrons would become agitated and leap from one fixed orbit to another. Each downward leap would emit energy in the form of light in very specific wavelengths, and that's why atoms produce very specific colors. This is where we get the phrase, quantum leap.
If it weren't for the quantum leap, you would have this smear of color coming out from an atom as it got excited or de-excited. But that's not what we see in the laboratory. You see very sharp reds and very sharp greens. It's the quantum leap that's the origin and the author of that sharp color.
What made the quantum leap so surprising is that the electron goes directly from here to there, seemingly without moving through the space in between. It was as if Mars suddenly popped from its own orbit out to Jupiter. Bohr argued that the quantum leap arises from a fundamental and fundamentally weird property of electrons and atoms, that their energy comes in discrete chunks that cannot be subdivided, specific minimum quantities called quanta. And that's why there are only discrete, specific orbits that electrons can occupy.
Electrons had to be here or there and simply nowhere in between. And that's like nothing we experience in everyday life.
Think of your daily life. When you eat food, you think your food is quantized? Do you think that you have to take a certain amount of minimum food? Food is not quantized. But the energy of electrons in an atom are quantized. That is very mysterious why that is.
As mysterious as it might be for tiny particles in an atom to act this way, the evidence quickly mounted, showing that Bohr was right. In more and more experiments, electrons followed a different set of rules than planets or ping pong balls. Bohr's discovery was a game changer. And with this new picture of the atom, Bohr and his colleagues
colleagues found themselves on a collision course with the accepted laws of physics. The quantum leap was just the beginning. Soon Bohr's radical views would bring him head-to-head with one of the greatest physicists in history. Albert Einstein was not afraid of new ideas. But during the 1920s, the world of quantum mechanics began to veer in a direction Einstein did not want to go. A direction that sharply diverged from the absolute definitive predictions that were the hallmark of classical physics.
If you asked Einstein or other physicists at the time what it was that distinguished physics from all kind of flaky speculation, they would have said it's that we can predict things with certainty. And quantum mechanics seemed to pull the rug out from under that.
One test in particular, which would come to be known as the double slit experiment, exposed quantum mysteries like no other. If you're looking for a description of reality based on certainty, your expectations would be shattered. We can get a pretty good feel for the double slit experiment and how dramatically it alters our picture of reality by carrying out a similar experiment, not on the scale of tiny particles, but on the scale of more ordinary objects, like those you find here in a bowling alley. But first, I need to make a couple of adjustments to the lane. You'd expect that if I roll a few of these balls down the lane, they'll either be stopped by the barrier, or pass through one or the other slit and hit the screen at the back. And in fact, that's just what happens. Those balls that make it through always hit the screen directly behind either the left slit or the right slit. The double slit experiment was much like this, except instead of bowling balls, you use electrons, which are billions of times smaller. You can picture them like this. Let's see what happens if I throw a bunch of these balls. When electrons are hurled at the two slits, something very different happens on the other side. Instead of hitting just two areas, the electrons land all over the detector screen, creating a pattern of stripes, including some right between the two slits, the very place you'd think would be blocked. So, what's going on? Well, to physicists, even in the 1920s, this pattern could mean only one thing. Waves. Waves do all kinds of interesting things. Things that bowling balls would never do. They can split. They can combine. If I sent a wave of water through the double slits, it would split in two, and then the two sets of waves would intersect. Their peaks and valleys would combine, getting bigger in some places, smaller in others, and sometimes they cancel each other out. With the height of the water corresponding to brightness on the screen, the peaks and valleys would create a series of stripes and what's known as an interference pattern. So, how could electrons, which are particles, form that pattern? How could a single electron end up in places a wave would go?
Particles are particles, waves are waves. How could a particle be a wave? Unless you give up the idea that it's a particle and think, aha, this thing that I thought was a particle was actually a wave. A wave in an ocean? That's not a particle. The ocean is made out of particles, but the waves in the ocean are not particles. And rocks are not waves. Rocks are rocks. So a rock is an example of a particle. An ocean wave is an example of an ocean wave. And now somebody's telling you a rock is like an ocean wave. What?
Back in the 1920s, when a version of this experiment was first done, scientists struggled to understand this wavy behavior.
Some wondered if a single electron, while in motion, might spread out into a wave. And the physicist Erwin Schrödinger came up with an equation that seemed to describe it.
Schrödinger thought that this wave was a description of an extended electron, that somehow an electron got smeared out, and it was no longer a point, but was like a mush.
There was a lot of argument about exactly what this represented. Finally, a physicist named Max Born came up with a new and revolutionary idea for what the wave equation described. Born said the wave is not a smeared out electron or anything else previously encountered in science. Instead, he declared it's something that's really peculiar, a probability wave. That is, Born argued that the size of the wave at any location predicts the likelihood of the electron being found there.
Where the wave is big, that's not where most of the electron is. That's where the electron is most likely to be.
And that's just very strange, right? So the electron on its own seems to be a jumble of possibilities.
You're not allowed to ask, where is the electron right now? You are allowed to ask, if I look for the electron in this little particular part of space, what is the likelihood I will find it there? I mean, that bugs anyone, anytime.
As weird as it sounds, this new way of describing how particles like electrons move is actually right. When I throw a single electron, I can never predict where it will land. But if I use Schrödinger's equation to find the electron's probability wave, I can predict with great certainty that if I throw enough electrons, then say 33.1% would end up here, 7.9% would end up there, and so on. These kinds of predictions have been confirmed again and again by experiments. And so the equations of quantum mechanics turn out to be amazingly accurately precise, so long as you can accept that it's all about probability. If you think that probability means you're reduced to guessing, the casinos of Las Vegas are ready to prove you wrong. Try your hand at...
Okay, that's a good place to stop that. Now I'll try to call the madman.
Right, it's there.
Hey! Hey, you're live!
Oh, there's the guy with
you
the
funny
hair.
Call in and interrupt my show, man. You're live on there, so did you listen in on any of that?
No.
You guys are going to fail this test.
Oh, we love failing tests. It's funnier.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pop quiz. What do you know about quantum physics? What does science know about the world, really? Seriously.
What's that got to do with cutting up on Shaziz's radio show?
You guys called in right at the wrong time.
Thank you. So appreciate it. We've been practicing.
Yeah, well, you did good on that. You passed that test, but you failed the quantum physics test. Where is the electron going to be? Do you know?
Well, actually,
they can't find it.
They can't find it.
I know with quantum physics, and this is Dublin here, with quantum physics, they got a whole load of dead cats, meat, and poison in boxes. You know. So they're going to get done for cruelty to animals. You know.
Hey, fill us in on what we're supposed to be talking about.
That was just totally bizarre, man.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Fill us in.
Now, they have to test what's called a quantum test. If the cat looks in the box, and there's food in the box with poison, and he gets in and he eats the poison. Now, you put the cat in the box with poisonous food, and then you close the lid. Now, you have a probability that the cat will eat the poisonous food and be dead when you open the door, or you have a probability the cat will smell a rat and not eat the food, and when you open the door, the cat's alive and well. It's called probability, and it's to do with quantum physics. But it sure means they get to kill a lot of cats. And they're going to get done.
I'm not into killing cats. My brain is like totally melted now.
Yeah, well, there you are. You got a few cats to spare. You know how to do quantum physics. Stick the cat in the box and find out what happens.
So anyway, back to the subject. Don't kill no cats, people.
Just about in there, Shaziz.
Don't kill no cats.
I did know a punk in the 1980s that smashed the windows of a butcher's to let the pork sausages run free in the countryside. He's an anarchist. No rules.
Well, in quantum physics, it doesn't seem to be any set of rules.
This is my point.
Alright, well, anyway.
As far as the electron goes here, Shaziz, I know that one electron has more information than your total hard drives of all of our computers put together. And there's an electron on the opposite side of the Earth that has the same information that reacts as this one does. And somewhere across the universe, that electron is way out there as well.
So what do you say to the folks that doesn't even believe there even is electron?
Don't kill cats.
Oh, man.
Turn your computer up.
Oh. So, anyway. Man, you guys just killed my brain. We got killing cats and everything.
We killed the chicken first, though.
Alright, well, stop killing the cats. Stop letting the pigs free. And let's talk about quantum physics for a second. You know, whenever they talked about the double slit deal, where, you know, whenever somebody was actually watching it, something different occurred, or when the waves came in there, they'd split in two, and sometimes the waves would cancel themselves out or whatever. Regardless, everything out there, even according to their own laws of physics, which they can't even necessarily explain, and in the mainstream science, they're continuously arguing back and forth with each other on who's right and who's wrong and all that kind of stuff. So what is it that we really know about anything as far as science goes?
It has a lot to do with our concept and our reality viewed by our brain, because they put one slit. They take an electron beam and they shoot one electron at a time through that single slit, and it makes the same shape of the slit on the other side. But if they make two slits, it winds up, it should look like two slits. That's what it looks like when we look at it. But when we don't look at it, it makes a nice pattern across there.
Is that kind of like
Here's the thing that I don't get, is how do they know it makes a different pattern when they're not looking at it? Because they can't look at it to tell.
Is that kind of like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, does it make a sound?
I guess it's kind of like if you're way out in the woods, way away from where no woman has been, are you still wrong?
Maybe. Anyway, I did a video here yesterday about frequency waves, and I showed actually how you could take the Slayer Exciter, and I showed it was a totally different frequency than your average current that we use today, but yet you could take this same wave and you could transmit it back into usable current again. So, to me, what that says and what the tuning fork example shows is that energy travels in waveforms, and that's basically what they were saying in that documentary on how things are actually moving through universe, time, and space, or whatever, is in waveforms. And all of this carries information like dots and dashes on the Morse code or ones and zeros on the computer. And so, you can literally send information across sound by disrupting that wave, just as you can send different frequencies and send information over a computer using waveforms. What do you guys think?
I think basically what happens in radio.
Would you like to expand on that or leave us all hanging?
Well, I think I can take an antenna and put it out there and make a voltage multiplier out of capacitors and
crystal diodes, 1N34As or the like, and charge a cell phone with it. Why not tune to frequencies and stuff that you know has more power around it?
Well, my
belief... The neutrinos leave the sun, and they have a testatica that they say is free energy, but basically it's using the source that is around it. They say it's zero point. What we call zero point is 90% of the time it's the neutrinos. Basically, the neutrinos in the daytime, the neutrinos are very plentiful. At nighttime, they're still plentiful because they go through the Earth. Nothing really gets in their way.
Well,
it's kind of like light going through fog. It's still there.
Muddy, a scientist spent 15 years, 1.5 kilometers below the surface of the Earth with a polar water, trying to find neutrinos. Now, the interesting thing is when they did capture them, because they're quite random and they don't exactly come straight to the Earth, they released a jet of argon gas in a cone. But it took them 15 years to find them.
Huh.
Just a little tidbit of information.
Well, my view is this, you know, everything out there has its own specific frequency. And according to the laws of physics under the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. And so, in our general sense of when we do electricity, we're not actually doing anything outside of creating a disruption in the energy that's already there, that we use that disruption to actually do work with. Like if I was to tap on water and I got a little boat inside that pool of water, as I'm tapping on that water, I'm sending out a wave that's going to affect that boat floating in that water. Correct or incorrect?
That's correct. I used to play with that theory. I get in the hotel swimming pool where I worked as a handyman, I guess, because I was pretty handy. But anyway, in the middle of the pool, I'd sit there and I'd stand to where I could, you know, to where I was about shoulder deep, maybe a little less, and I'd look at the whole pool, and I'd look at the edge. I'm probably about 10 inches down from the bottom. I mean, from the top. So therefore, you know, the water's not going to fall, you know, knock out when you dive in and stuff like that. But here I am, dead center of the pool, and I got my arms out and my hands flat and kind of up and down, thumb up, you know, with thumbs up. And then I moved my hands forward and I watched the wave go across the pool. When the wave got to me, I'd help that wave. And then every time it reached me, I'd do it more. After a while, you find the frequency that the pool resonates at by its size, or a harmonic that works, and you just keep moving your arms back and forth. And within a whole minute, you got big waves like you got at sea. And these things are slapping over the side, losing at least, you know, 10 gallons a second, you know. And, you know, I mean, it looks like rough sea weather. And all of that just from a little nudge by my hands sitting out on the side. And then when I give it some really good, hefty vibration, as it would be noted, you give it some hefty vibration, next thing you got some bigger waves. I mean, and you know you better stop or that pool's going to be about 12 to 14 inches below. And that's a lot of water when you figure it out over the surface area of the whole pool. So, yeah, I've played with that a lot of times. Every time I get in a pool, I do that.
Well, in your description of how you interacted with that pool, the pool being the bubble of energy that we're literally floating around in, as you're tapping on that water, you're sending energy in a form of a wave across that water. You could literally send data, if you tap this out and had a way to decipher the data on the opposite side, almost as if when you were talking about when you take the long bamboo and there's a guy downstream and you can sit there because these two bamboos are the same length and they resonate with each other, that you could actually talk via the water. You know what I'm trying to say here?
Right, same length, same intermodal length, same diameter, same weight, same everything. If you tapped on them out of water, they'd bring it the same deal. You stick them two-thirds in and tap on it. Yeah, that was the first digital communication, and it was done by the Native American Indians.
Well, essentially, in that example, you changed nothing. You didn't defy any laws of physics. All you did was disrupt the system long enough to send a data transfer from one portion of the stream up to the other one using the water itself as a medium. Now, you could do the same thing with air. You know, you could vibrate the air, and if you had a receiver on the other side that was capable of amplifying the wave that just came through the air, you know, acoustic wave, such as like a, you know, a jet flying by, breaking the sound barrier or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, you can do it here.
Go
ahead, Steve.
I read a bit of research a while ago where a bunch of scientists did a whole group of experiments, and they thought negatively about the experiment, and they thought positively about the experiment remotely. They weren't even in the same room as the experiment, and it provided different results.
Well, that ought to say something there, because if you think about it, anything that generates an electrical spark or whatever, any kind of electrical energy, like your even your thoughts alone, you know, when you think, you got energy going on in your head, which creates some sort of disturbance in the field, and so. Why wouldn't it be that, like the examples that you get when a mother is on a different side of a state than a daughter, and suddenly the daughter gets in danger and the mother knows it instantaneously. You see what I'm saying?
There's a guy called Dr. Masaru Emoto that does water molecule experiments.
Yes.
And it's about consciousness of thought. I'll drop the link into there and I'll throw it into... Shazir's radio as well.
Water has memory.
Yeah. Even with one of those argon devices. If you put an argon device on top of a container full of water and freeze it, it will shadow the shape of the device above it.
So, the field that thing is actually putting out, and I said this as well about the... when they got a deal out there where they talk about the... magnetic pole of the earth flipping and stuff. Well, in my belief, according to what I know about science and electricity, it is virtually impossible for our magnetic field to flip, with exception of every once in a while when the sun spits off a coronal mass ejection and yanks it around and whatever flip-flops it for a moment, a brief moment in time. But there is a sweet point in that time when there's a temperature that molten rock is liquid, and then as it gets to the right cooling point, it can literally capture a picture of any given instance at the same time, such as this device, orgon device that you're talking about. It has its own resonant frequency, and so as it's disrupting that field because of its own specific resonance, it's capturing a picture at when that water is finally gets to its cooling point and freezing in the ice. So they said that the magnetic field had flipped so many times in the past because they were able to see the patterns of the flux lines in the the cooled down magma. What I suggest is that it didn't completely flip and stay there. What I suggest is that whenever a coronal mass ejection hit the magnetosphere, while it was in the process of doing its flip backwards, you know, because when the plasma hits the magnetosphere, it literally stretches it out into space and then snaps back into place. At the moment that was stretched out into space, if you have molten magma that is being cooled down and it hits right at the time when it hits that sweet spot whenever the coolness begins to harden the crust of the magma, then it will catch that pattern in the magma. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I saw a documentary on that where they were talking about the magnetic pole switching on an hourly basis. Now, if there's a lot of sun activity at the time, anybody that's looked at the magnetosphere of the Earth during a coronal mass ejection will see it being stretched about like an elastic band.
Yeah.
So that does actually make sense. And to be honest, all they've got is a theory. But they've got a load of people behind them that pay them a lot of money to to say a lot of things, because they've turned a lot of blank white pieces of paper into dirty pieces of paper with lots of writing on. But they don't have any more evidence than we do.
Well, if you catch, if you take a picture, a still photo of somebody jumping up in the air, you'll catch them at different points every time you snap that shutter. You're not going to catch the entire picture. You will freeze frame something in that entire portion. And so that's what I'm talking about in that magma. When that magnetosphere stretched out into space like you're talking about, while it was stretched out into space, and then the magma cooled at that sweet spot where it literally took a snapshot at that time in space. It didn't mean that the magnetosphere flipped upside down or the magnetic field flipped upside down. It just meant that that's when it caught it. And so because the Earth is spinning in a certain direction, it's just like an electric motor. When you change the polarity of electric motor, you know, you can flip that field around. You see what I'm saying?
So basically what you're saying, Shaziz, is somebody takes a picture of a human being leaping off a cliff, suddenly humans can fly because they weren't touching the ground.
For that brief point in time, science would say, yeah, they were flying. But if you were
that fellow there, he's flapped his arms and everything.
Yeah. But, see, that's it. That's the reason why I wanted to play this quantum theory video, part of the documentary, because one, it talks about the frequency waves that I was talking about in my deal, in my video that I did. Everything, I believe, energy goes in waveforms, and we're not necessarily doing anything outside of disrupting the energy that's already there. So, far as I'm concerned, free energy, if you can't find it, you ain't looking hard enough for it. When you take a strong magnetic field and you're shaking it across the copper wire to shake loose the extra electron that's loosely coupled in copper, and you get that energy release that goes down there, and we call that electricity. Why does it take that strong brute magnetic field to do that, when now all you have to do is literally find the frequency of the electron, if you follow the electron theory, and just stimulate the electron at the right frequency, as opposed to running it at 60 hertz, which we all know in turn creates friction, which in turn creates heat, and anything above that will literally destroy the coils of wire in your electrical device. So all I'm saying is that we know everything works in a wave, you design a generator that all you're doing is essentially tapping it just enough. Instead of using a hammer, you're using a feather. What do you think?
Yeah, I believe that, because it doesn't really feet off the ground.
Say what?
Well, I have to say, Shaziz, that some of the waves that I've seen you produce have managed to make you levitate while screaming quite loudly and saying, ouch.
Well, I think that frequency ranges of all different types have the capability to do a lot, and I mean a whole lot more. Everything from medical industry to generating industry and even space travel itself or whatever. I say that, you know, I use an example of the microwave, how it actually functions and the disturbance that the microwave actually does to the water molecule, being the water molecule is a dipole molecule, as a positive and negative. And as that wave's coming in, the peaks north and south are disrupting that water molecule, creating friction, which in turn is creating heat that cooks your food. So we know that frequency waves have interactions, and you know they use sound waves and ultrasound in order to get a picture of what's going on in the human body, can actually come to the point where they tell you whether or not it's going to be a boy or a girl before it's ever even born. And all those are, in any sense, even with piezoelectrics, when you're using a piezoelectric to record a heartbeat or whatever, it's a disruption in that field. That's the energy that's all the way around us, and we're able to change that into data, you know, by the dots and dashes or the ones and zeros, however you want to look at it. What's your thoughts?
My point about mentioning that, Shaziz, is you've gone through an entire range of frequencies.
and you found the ones that are not always conducive to the human body.
I'll tell you what, I have seen some anomalies messing around with frequencies that I were told with beyond a shadow of a doubt were not possible, and that's why I'm so adamant about what the research that I'm doing.
Like time travel?
Well, you would be surprised at what would really be possible. Now, if you listen to quantum physics, according to quantum physics, anything's possible. Am I wrong?
But to further that point, Shaziz, you might have found a lot of negative human reactions, but that doesn't mean to say you haven't found some positive ones as well. Really.
Well, I mean, my question is this.
Such a wide scope of it.
In the frequency world, now the radio guys are out there, the ham radio guys and the citizen band radio guys, these guys are leaps and bounds ahead of the majority of all the mainstream scientists, because they've not only figured out what they can do with frequencies, but they've cataloged specific frequencies so they know that they can talk to several different people without interfering with the other one's communications. You see what I'm saying?
I know a guy in England that can talk to people in Russia.
Well, see,
with a ham radio.
And there again, you know, here he is transmitting, however he does it, whether it be an old mechanical microphone or a piezoelectric microphone, changing that acoustic wave coming out of his mouth into a signal that is dots and dashes or ones and zeros, however you want to look at it. It's a disruption in the energy wave, and he's sending it all the way through the air over to the other side of the world and talking to this man.
This is with a bunch of car batteries, solar panels, and a 30-foot antenna.
Right.
He gets his batteries from a scrapyard and reconditions them himself. And he built a load of solar panels and he bought some as well. I mean, that to me, that guy is my hero.
I need to get my ham radios on the air. I'd like to talk with old Kent down there in Hawaii.
That'd be cool.
He's a ham radio operator.
Well,
Just a couple thoughts. Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Steven Gibbons in the deals talking about Hutchison, you know, for whatever you want to say about John Hutchison, he had some really interesting things going on with his frequencies that he was getting from old military-style radio transmitters and stuff. And
well, there's your thing about quantum that you was talking about.
Yeah.
He'd levitate bowling balls and all sorts of stuff, and you'd see them turning in the air, so you know they weren't on a string. The water would come out of a cup in its own shape. You can't get that any other way. That's not trick photography, man.
The
deal is, people would come by to see that.
I've watched it sometimes.
It's kind of like the double slip theory. When it's watched, it doesn't happen. So people come by to see it, and he never could recreate it with somebody else there.
Well, they even had John come down to the BP oil spill in Florida to use his frequencies to disperse soil.
It worked.
Yes.
They claim that it didn't, but he did a bunch of videos on that proving and showing it.
Well, you know that a sound wave can do work, you know that a frequency wave can do work, and so why wouldn't a frequency wave be able to disperse oil? You know, you've got, when I use the example of the opera singer in the crystal glass, when the opera singer reaches the resonance of the crystal glass, it begins to vibrate, and at some point, if it vibrates too much, it'll literally pull itself apart. That's when the glass shatters.
You should be able to turn water into wine using frequency.
Well, truthfully, brother, nothing would surprise me. And I know that a lot of this kind of sounds all kinds of crazy, but then you go into the quantum physics world and start talking about how they're, you know, figuring things
Everything's a frequency. All you got to do is manipulate it.
Yeah.
You can turn anything into whatever you wanted it to be.
And the universe was spoke into existence. Even the devil told Jesus, he says, why don't you turn these stones into bread? He turned the water into wine. He did it with words. But, you know, the universe was spoke into existence. You know, maybe some things are not knowledge for us. But, if I could, I'd be turning a bunch of lead into gold. I'd go to Boomer's. He's got a lot of stuff on lead.
That's alchemy, and Nostradamus and spoke about it. It's quite possible. It's a well-known fact that you can...
Well, I think that
metals.
All the atoms out there, all the molecules that come together, you know, there's a specific frequency at which they all form, you know. And I know there's an experiment out there somewhere to verify what it is I'm saying, that if you hit certain frequencies, you generate certain types of materials.
Yeah, you got to go much deeper than the atom, though, because, I mean, we got protons, neutrons, and then quarks, and even smaller. And you got to get to the subatomic.
Well, I've got it. Oh, go ahead.
Well, when it all comes down to it, it's all information, but the information is delivered via disruptions in the entire field of what we're floating around in. Do you agree or disagree?
It's kind of electricity. It's resistance. Like, so, you know, you create a certain amount of resistance and you get a certain result, as opposed to...
I submit we're using electricity in the Stone Age fashion. You know, we use a hammer when we could use a feather to get the same amount of work done. And the reason why I say that, because every single thing out there, not even mainstream scientists will disagree that every single thing out there has its own specific frequency that it resonates at, such as the two tuning forks. And so if you can match the resonance of the electron, if you believe that there is an electron, because there's both sides of the story. Some folks say there ain't no electron. We don't know, because we've never actually got a really good picture of it. However, we do know that
of course there's an electron. Electron is actually... See, you've got to go smaller than the electron.
Yeah, but see, we ain't never got a picture of the electron. All we get when we go down to the atom size is a fuzzy picture. It's either too fast or it's not in the right place at the right time. For whatever reason, nobody's ever been able to get a photo of an electron.
Kind of like UFOs.
Now, mathematical...
Be clear photos, huh?
Mathematical equations will figure out and say that, yeah, the electron is there, but can you see it? That's the question. And I'm kind of like, I'm living in the show-me state. Show me the electron, I want to see it, you know? Now, I'm not disagreeing that the electron's there, because I can use the electron theory to explain what I'm trying to say, just as the same model would apply to even if we didn't have an electron, because I believe that the waveforms that disrupt that electron is what we actually call our electricity at the end of the day. You know, whenever an electron interacts with another electron, the two fields will couple, they will release their energy, and... You know, maybe it's just a case of because they're both the same polarity that they repel each other, but that energy release during that interaction is what we call electricity. And at certain frequencies, it hurts. Literally. You know, you get the crud shocked out of you.
Well, for the sake of getting thrown off the show, science is a bit like religion, because I've never seen a picture of Jesus either. Do we have to take
they got trouble.
It's a good point. I'm sorry, but it's a good point.
It is.
Regardless, it's all.
Are we supposed to?
It's all faith. It's all theory.
Rich people want us to believe a certain thing.
It's all faith. It's all theory. It's all speculation. Until you've got some sort of physical entity standing right in front of you that is, regardless, no way. Anybody can deny.
See, that's
but the same could be said about Napoleon.
But either way,
that's one of the problems with humans, is if they can't touch it and smell it and taste it, then they don't believe it. And that doesn't mean it's not there.
Well, I agree, and that's why I'm saying, you know, I have my beliefs on both religion, and I have my beliefs on science and electricity and all that. From what my observations has been, it's all been a frequency wave that, you know, frequencies are in all different lengths and speeds and whatever.
And humans are like snowflakes. Every single one of it. That's why our DNA, like if you take people's DNA, you can find out who's who, because we're all different. None of us have all the same DNA.
Yeah, we're like, with that said,
so that's because we're born that at the very moment when you're born. Maybe, I don't know if it's when you're born or when you're conceived, but at that moment, there is a frequency, and that becomes your frequency.
Essentially, each and every one of us, by what you're saying, have our own personal phone number, you know?
That's exactly correct.
I got to add this. You say if you find a certain frequency, you can create anything. I don't think so. I think words are a conglomerate of different sounds and frequencies. And that's, you know, something spoken into existence, or you can change something with a word. It has to be more than one frequency.
Yeah, but it's all a combination of data. So maybe it is multiple frequencies. It's dots and dashes interrupting the field at any given time, which like...
I'm sure that if you understood frequencies good enough with your voice, you could do some pretty phenomenal stuff.
Well, I believe so. We know at one specific frequency, the opera singer can literally shatter glass, crystal glass, so why couldn't you shatter other things with your voice?
Or turn things to liquid, or...
Such as cancer shells.
Yeah.
I came across a video the other day.
Turn water into wine, or lead into gold, or... I mean, I think it's all there. I learned this at a rather young age, actually. I don't know why I came to the realization. Because I studied some of this stuff, like palm reading and astrology and numerology. And I came to that realization that everybody is a frequency. Everything is a frequency.
Well, I can't disagree with that because... Go ahead,
Steve. I came across a video the other day, and this is really important from what I was saying about scientists thinking differently about their experiments. There's a medicine, like a drug-free hospital in China, where they claim that they can cure bowel cancer. And they show you live video of this tumor reducing in someone's bowel by people making certain sounds. But it's the thought that they put behind the sounds that they're making that is supposedly curing the cancer.
Exactly. This is what I was getting at a while back when I was sitting there talking about. It started off with the bamboo. Just to have something that resonates at the same frequency. I mean, you got many different instruments that resonate at the same frequency, but you can tell which instrument it is. There are spurious harmonics and other frequencies that go along with it to make that sound just like it is. So,
well, yeah. Do you understand that you can literally get a physical discomfort reaction from somebody just by running your fingers down a chalkboard?
Yeah.
You can literally cause a reaction physically in their body just by that sound.
No doubt about it.
Cat trying to climb a Cadillac.
And so, with that said, you know, if you was to catalog every single tone, every single frequency out there, like the, like I said, the ham radio guys, they know at what frequency ranges they can talk on. They know how to send carrier signals over the top of other signals to send data. They know how to, like, tap out the Morse code, for Pete's sake, just using the microphone.
But there's too many frequencies to ever map them all out.
Maybe, but now would be a good time to start.
Too small. You can have two frequencies that are so close together, the average person wouldn't even recognize the difference. But they're very different.
Well, think of this. If you walk down the street behind somebody and get exactly in their pace for maybe 10 or 20 steps, and you drop down on one knee behind them, you can watch them fall over in front of you. And I've proven that to myself. It works because I've done it. if I'm walking down the street or something, if you match pace with somebody and walk down the street for maybe 100 yards exactly matching their pace, and you need to be about 6 feet behind them, and then you drop down onto one knee, all of a sudden they stumble.
Interesting.
Try it.
That's very interesting.
I gotta try that. Hey, Shaziz, start walking.
Yeah, you can come back now. But yeah, either way, there's a physical interaction going with the you guys just pretty much synchronized as far as I'm concerned, and that total disruption they are in tune with. And so the moment you stop, they stumble, because it's almost like I just tripped on something that wasn't there. But actually, in all actuality, you guys were synchronized. Am I wrong?
If you want to call it this, you're getting harmonic resonance with their toroidal energy field. You're within their toroid field of energy, and you're harmonizing with it.
Well, Dave Smith just put in there, so a cancer cell would have a frequency. Yeah, everything has its own specific frequency.
Yeah.
Even separate bacteria, have their own specific frequency.
Yeah, but my cancer is going to have a different frequency than your cancer.
Yeah, but
we have the same cancer because we, as individuals, have different frequencies.
But once somebody figures out a way to literally measure the frequencies of any given size material, whatever, you could go in and target specific your cancer with one frequency and come in and target specific mine at the same time.
And that's like Star Trek with the, they used to have that thing.
Yeah.
They could heal broken bones or whatever was wrong.
And if you notice.
That's exactly what it is, it's frequency. And I think John Hutchinson is probably leading edge on this. Billy Hayes is pretty up on some of this stuff.
If you notice, life seems to imitate art. Like a lot of the things that you've seen in the movies when you were kids, they have in reality today. Who'd have thought? You'd have a TV the size enough to fit on your wrist, but back in the day, they had the old, Dick Tracy had his communicator that he could set
sci-fi.
Yeah. So, science fiction pretty much led science, and here you are seeing it in the modern day, and so when we're sitting here talking about frequencies, the device that you were discussing that was on Star Trek, they were literally using frequency waves to heal bones that were broken.
And I think... You know what I think we're going to see next on the horizon is the replicator, where you can see once they narrow down what things are made of, which in some ways they're not even made anything, but there is some particulate matter, but it's also frequency. And so once they narrow that down, we won't use microwaves, we'll use a replicator, and it'll fucking materialize anything right out of thin air.
All right, a replicator. In fact, they've made a kidney using the man's own DNA and transplanted the kidney to him, and it's zero rejection because it is his own DNA made from his own.
Yeah. They're doing.
If you look at the science experiments where they're actually taking speakers and they'll put salt into a speaker and hit it with generated different tones and stuff. You can literally sit there and watch as geometrical shapes form in that salt. So these are actually trying to combine in some sort of element to that frequency.
And I think we don't understand our own ability to control frequency. We don't like Steve was saying, you're walking behind somebody and you do that. You're actually controlling frequency at that point. And I don't think we understand how much control we have over frequency. I've seen experiments with water that show if you love water or hate water or whatever, it changes the structure of the water.
Exactly. Then they cryogenic freeze it instantly.
Our personal,
they look at it and it shows different patterns. Beautiful patterns or really screwed up patterns.
Okay, so now I have an idea. Now, we start a club, and we all pick the same lottery numbers, and then we concentrate on those lottery numbers, and we could win because we could control the outcome.
It's got to be a pretty big club.
Try that, Pocket Puzz. In that article I dropped into the chat there. Human mind controls coin flips. Consciousness control.
Well, what I saw the other day was, 2000... When was 9/11? 2001. 2002, on September 11th, the lottery draw was 911, and there was like a ridiculous number of people that won that day, because they all picked 911, and well, I don't know that why, but it's just rather remarkable that those numbers came up on that day, on September 11th, 2002.
Well, years ago, there was a book that came out called The Power of Positive Thinking, and so that pretty much falls in line with what you're talking about.
I actually took a course on positive thinking when I was going through my divorce.
But either way, what's going on here? That's the question, is because we are, like I say, we're literally floating in a sea of energy. And only thing, how we transmit data is by interrupting a field, a magnetic field or a sound wave or whatever. We can literally change the tones in a flute by, you know, how much air pressure is going through there and which hole we put our finger on. And so you're literally sending data with sound, just like you would send data through your computer. Ones, zeros, dots, and dashes. When it comes out on the other side, they hear the differences, and your brain picks it up. And, you know, so what I'm saying about electricity shouldn't be surprising anybody.
No. Here's a thought, Steve, and she says, the thought is, you can go along with what Stone was talking about. The water memory, water has memory, it goes through all sorts of stuff. In cities where they don't have enough water, it goes through all these bins in the pipe, and then you drink it, and then they take it back, and they recycle it, and it keeps going back and forth. It has no life, and the people seem to lose energy and get sick. Even though the water has been purified, it's because the water has memory. When it gets evaporated, and when it gets evaporated or frozen and then recycled that way, it comes up with a whole new coating of life all over, and it is fresh.
It's unhappy water.
So
I have to have another plan, and that is to make beer out of water that's been loved.
Yeah.
Since you're saying that water has memory, which I don't discount, because at this stage in the game, nothing would surprise me.
So, it is living water.
So I drink water, and it comes through me.
It's a welcome.
Listen. And so I drink water, and it comes through me, and I'm a negative person, and the water remembers me, even though it gets recycled into the system. At some point, somebody else will drink that water and pick up that information that I just sent. Now, is that not plausible?
No, it's absolutely plausible. That's what I'm saying. It's so important how we have really pissed water off. We really have, and it has feelings and memory, and we don't understand that. You get your vegetarians, don't eat animals, that's so cruel. Well, you think that plant didn't have some feelings, didn't have some? We don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, here's another point. If you go up to the top of the mountain where the water's melting fresh, and some people, just one glass of that water heals them of things that doctors couldn't heal them before. And on top of that, you said man can't control the frequencies and stuff. We can't get enough information for teleportation. Well, they have succeeded. Here's the deal. You can take water, have it in one vessel, and then you pour it into two identical vessels. Leave one down, say, Houston, and take the other one up to Pennsylvania. And you do something to the water down in Houston, and something happens to it up there in Pennsylvania. The same water shows the same thing. You can put something in it here, and it has it up there.
That's like the million monkey thing, too, right? They took monkeys and they taught them to what did they do? They taught them to wash their food on an island. This is an island with monkeys. They taught them to wash their food, And then they realized that monkeys all around the world were starting to wash their food.
That's cool, isn't it? Here's the other thing. They actually took that science that I was talking about, and they used it to do teleportation. But before they can teleport a few molecules or so, they have to have this water from the same source and bring it to the place where they want to teleport to. The water has enough memory that it can, that what happens to this water happens to that water over there, and that's the technology they're using for teleportation.
Cool. Hey, I never thought of that. Stargates could be on that sort of a principle.
Well, you look at a scientist, he's looking at bacteria under a microscope, and there is a solar flare on the sun. Eight and three tenths of a second later, we see the solar flare. But if a scientist is looking at that bacteria under a microscope, 8.35 seconds or so before we notice the solar flare, these bacteria all of a sudden go nuts.
Well, it doesn't surprise me.
They look like they're breakdancing all of a sudden. If you, as soon as you see that, if you get outside within that 8 and a third seconds, you'll get to see the solar flare if you can set your doggone telescope up with the block and all that stuff.
It doesn't surprise me none, because if you think about it, think about how fast is the actual speed of light and the actual speed of sound. Does anybody know that?
No, because a bunch of scientists agreed a few years ago to make it one figure because they couldn't agree on it.
But either way, it's really super fast. Do you think that you could literally see something that was moving at the speed of light?
Not with the human optic system, no.
Well, going the same speed.
And once again, there's my point.
Oh, that doesn't make any sense. Everything we see is moving at the speed of light.
Yeah, but see, we're seeing it after it gets here because it's moved so fast that we're catching basically data from the past.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I suppose in a sense. Yes.
But either way, since your eye is only so fast, you're sending that data in. The data's coming in. At some point, it's coming in so rapidly, are we seeing it before it gets here, or are we seeing it after it's done past?
It's kind of like color. It's kind of like color. Like, something that we see as red isn't red. It's blue and yellow. It's actually blue and yellow. But we see it as red.
That's what gets reflected back.
Sure does.
Yeah.
Your question was, if something was moving at the speed of light, could you see it? A bullet does not move at the speed of light. You cannot see it because it's moving too fast.
Well,
or if you're going the same speed as the bullet.
It does not. A bullet does not travel anywhere near the speed of light.
About 600 miles an hour, the average bullet.
Well, faster than the speed of sound.
But isn't that...
I had a bumblebee in the car, and I was going down the road 60 miles an hour.
But isn't that amazing that you could literally be looking, when we look out at space or whatever, they say that the light that's getting here now, because it's so far away, that planet might not even be there anymore.
It might not. That's exactly right. It's like
our sun might not even be there.
We can shoot 3 people before anybody even hears the gun go off.
I had an idea when I was younger about how to, because I was always taught you can't go faster than the speed of light. And I thought, well, if you could ride somehow on a photon that is going the speed of light, and it was in a train of photons, you could jump from one train, you could run forward on the train that was going the speed of light, and you would go faster than the speed of light.
Well, heck, it's basically what I was saying about the solar flare on the sun. It's traveling much faster than the speed of light. Much faster. Matter of fact.
Well, they get up to 600, 800 kilometers per second.
So would I be wrong in thinking that when you were talking about the bacteria experiment, where the bacteria actually sensed the solar flare prior to its even us being able to, that the bacteria was more sensitive because maybe of its size or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, you're at the subconscious.
This is something we were talking about yesterday, or in the last couple of days. It is the fact that, you know, we talk about aliens from outer space, and we think of little green men, or we think of things like that. But we have star matter coming onto the Earth from all over the galaxy, bombarding us. And aliens could be any... Like Ebola, for instance, could be aliens.
Are you saying the aliens could be riding on those photons or something?
I'm saying our understanding of aliens. I mean, they can be all the viruses that attack the Earth on a regular basis could come from different places outside of the Earth. We're bombarded with star water and star matter. We are stardust, for that matter. That, you know.
Stone, I probably believe that if the boxes that Ebola was delivered in didn't have Fort Dixie stamped on the outside of them. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that, did I? Oh, oops.
Reminds me of Bugs Bunny, Acme. Acme.
Yeah.
Well, either way...
Coyote. Oh, Ebola! Acme!
Either way...
The only problem with trying to go faster than the speed of light is the principle of if a plane's going to crash... You wait till you get 6 feet from the ground and jump the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And jump up.
Either way, when we talk about people finding the holy grail of electricity, I'm saying it, you know, and I know I've got my haters out there because I say that energy isn't what we think it is or how we classify it and call it electricity, that everything's a vibrational frequency / wave of some sort. And so with that said, tuning in to any frequency, you can literally capture any frequency in the form of energy, store it, and then turn it back into usable current. Does anybody disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that at all. I have two thoughts I kind of got to finish up on. The any form of energy in a wave, if it reflects either by light, magnetism, sound, pressure, or anything like that, it can be collected up and concentrated and then utilized, kind of like a capacitor storing electricity. Any form of it, even the brain waves of thought. And the cool thing is hydrogen is our smallest atom, and the cool thing about it is just like our water molecule knows what's going on the sun, because there is water on the sun, you're dealing with hydrogen and you're dealing with helium on the sun.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, there has to be oxygen there, so therefore you do have water. And the cool thing is, what happens on one part of the universe happens on the other part of the universe. So they say a place way out there in the Andromeda Galaxy or something, something happens there. Or somebody decides to send a transmission on the frequency of hydrogen, it's almost instantaneous, even though it's light years away. The second thought is E equals MC squared. So we're looking at E equals MC mass times the speed of light squared.
Yeah, energy
equals
mass.
Okay, so it's the same thing as voltage equals, I'm sorry, power equals voltage times current. You can drop in current and raise the voltage up and you still have the same amount of power. Okay? Or you can drop the you could drop the other, vice versa, and you'll still have the same amount of power as long as the multiplication of the two numbers equals the same. 1 volt times 120 amps is 120 watts. 120 volts times 1 amps is 120 watts. So basically we get off into E equals MC squared. That means you can get rid of light or you can get rid of mass. Wait a minute, it's light times the speed of light squared. So in order to have energy, or to actually be here, we have to be traveling faster than the speed of light. We are traveling faster than the speed of light ever since the Big Boom, or we would not exist.
Yeah, no.
So the light we see is only the light that's traveling with us.
All the particles in a molecule and in an atom are traveling faster than the speed of light.
Yes. Or it will not exist.
Scott, you mentioned hydrogen and the universe. Isn't hydrogen the most prevalent of all materials throughout the entire universe?
Hydrogen and helium, everything is made of.
Yes.
Everything.
Well, so the way that we're using our energy today is essentially the Stone Age, because, like I say, according to their own laws of physics, the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So when we get things like heat loss or whatever inside there, even at the waste, you didn't lose nothing. All you did was move it from point A to point B, and you actually created heat at the same time you were creating electricity because you were doing it wrong.
So, and your point about frequency, if you could just, like I was saying in the pool, you helped the wave, And you said something about with just the force of a feather.
Yep.
That's what Boomer does. And how do you resonate gravity? Boomer has that secret sitting right in his yard, and it's almost as big as a doggone tractor trailer. And he operates it with feather touch, and it jams, it makes noise, I mean, it creates all sorts of power that you could not do with a feather.
We can
do
it.
Boomer?
Yeah. I can't operate it with a feather yet.
That's but it is absolutely. a wave, it is a frequency of not magnetism.
But what if you could scale that thing down? I mean, way down, you know, to where...
Check out his latest videos.
To where now... The feather had enough potential energy in order to keep that thing going just by touching the feather on it. You see what I'm saying? You haven't lost to gain anything. When we talk about the transfer of energy, you're not losing and you're not gaining anything. We're not defying any laws of physics by doing what I said. But if you talk about trying to run his machine with a feather, it's blatantly obvious that that's impossible.
Oh, no. I beg you. This would be the big time.
No, I'm saying the point.
I'm not, I guarantee I can stop that pendulum with a feather.
Listen, I'm saying according to their laws of physics, it's impossible.
Okay.
But I'm saying that it is possible if you have it at the right frequency. You know, there's a guy out there in martial arts called Hoist Gracie. Anybody know who he is?
Yes.
Now, he don't have to hit you hard in order to make you hurt and submit. All he does is use short thrusts just over and over and over and over again until that frequency just resonates in your body to the point where you're in such excruciating pain. You submit, and he hasn't hit you hard yet. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Well, I can understand that we...
Resonance.
We have a lot more power with the mind than we understand.
Well, and if you look at way back in history at some of the accomplishments that the people made, such as building the pyramids or Easter Island or any of that, you know, some of the precision in the cuts and the stonework back there, today's science can't even explain it because there's a lot of things that they did that we don't have heavy enough equipment to even do today.
I don't think it takes equipment. It's more about frequency control, like we've been talking about.
And
you can take an earth shaker truck and resonate the ground at a certain frequency and make everybody fall down.
Well, I don't see why you couldn't.
Now we're just going to have to go into heart.
Oh my
God, guys! I have an
ecumenical controlling frequency. Harp is leading edge on all of that, and this is. See, we're talking about something that the powers that be in the world today really have a handle on, and they are controlling frequency, and we're getting screwed over as a result.
Go ahead, Steve. Well,
I have an ecumenical question for you, and this should keep the Vatican busy for a while. If the Pope farts in the woods, does it make the head of a pin vibrate so much that bishops can't count the number of angels on it?
Huh. I don't know what to do with this, man.
I believe you're right.
Well, in fairness, lads, I'm going to work soon, and I'm not going to be around for a while, so I'm making the most of it. And if the Vatican wants to excommunicate me, go for it, boys.
And that's like one thing I said in one of my videos. Does a mechanical duck fart sparks?
I don't know, man.
We believe it does.
All I'm saying is that
I do have a point
anything that is going on out there, all the data that you receive via your eyes, your ears, your smell, your taste, your touch, and all that, when you actually touch something, are you really touching that? Or is it the vibrational frequency at the range to where your hand literally does not fall through it? You know, these are things that, you know, talk about in quantum physics.
Well, this table in front of me, it isn't actually a solid. The frequencies represent it as a solid.
Well, my point is this, though. That solid, that frequency is at such a range that your hand doesn't just fall through it when you touch it. It's beyond you to go through that frequency.
And that's right. So if I change the frequency of my hand or the frequency of the table, it would pass through.
Uh-huh, exactly. And so why aren't we in the space age right now? Because we have this knowledge, and I'm pretty sure that
the
guys are
I think
tough.
Because we've been held back, because we got lied to all our lives, for one thing. When I went to school, they taught me the smallest particle was an atom. Or, no, an electron and a proton they were trying to tell. And I'm like, fuck, no, it isn't. Are you kidding? I got kicked out of school because I argued with my teachers.
I just have a thought. If you took two dissimilar pieces of metal, put them together, found the correct frequency, applied pressure and frequency, they would actually open the molecules and verge together, and you could actually cause a weld without heat.
Yes, and they do that.
Yes.
They actually weld plastic by vibration.
Right.
Yeah, there's lots of good, lots of things that we have used and vibration and frequency for us.
They're unbelievable.
Alchemy, Nostradamus spoke of alchemy and how it would one day be a prevalent thing. And I've always dwelled on that alchemy thing, like turning anything into something else.
Well, personally, I couldn't care about trying to get gold from lead or anything like that, although I believe it's possible to rearrange the structure of molecules with such frequencies, and that's all fascinating to me. But my ultimate goal is to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that energy's free. And
I'd only do it if I could give it away.
Yeah.
Everybody with any kind of sense at all knows that energy is free. It is the machine to convert it to the type of energy you need and want.
Exactly. But if you look at that last video that I did there called Frequency, you see how I can actually take a frequency that can't be measured on your average device, but yet it can be turned back into usable current, and it's simply just using germanium diodes and a couple coils and a capacitor. There's nothing spectacular outside the fact that the other side is tuned to the right frequency to actually take some of that energy. Now, I was starting off with a 9-volt battery, and I was only getting like 2 points, slightly under 3 volts of electricity out of the deal because it wasn't perfectly tuned. I believe that if it was perfectly tuned, I would get exactly how much I put out before from the 9-volt battery. I would get out on the opposite side because according to the laws of conservation of energy that I keep saying and they keep saying, is energy can neither be created nor destroyed. We're not creating nor destroying. All we're doing is moving it from point A to point B. There were losses in there somewhere because it wasn't tuned properly.
Shiz, you said it twice. You didn't finish it. Energy and matter cannot be created nor destroyed without
creating or destroying the other.
That's right. But, so, you know, what I'm saying isn't defying any laws of physics. And as far as building a device that would run our electrical appliance as they stand, it's only a matter of tuning as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
I've watched my friend take capacitors and hook them up to 2- and 3-phase electric motors. And he set up several different of them with switches of it. And when he turned that thing on, when he got to a certain point, he would flip one of the switches and that capacitor would take some of the load and reduce the amp draw coming off of that motor. And then when he got a little further, he flipped another switch and it would drop the amperage load down even further. So as he was running this electric motor, he was literally tuning it as he gone. When he got to a certain point, this thing had a ridiculous amount of amp draw on this electric motor that shouldn't have been, according to the way that it was all written. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying. Exactly.
So, I know it's possible to do what it is I'm saying. And while you're running your electric motor, you're producing waste energy. And the further that energy gets away, such as the magnetic field, the flux lines that are coming off of all that waste energy. You know how you can like take a magnet paper and you can stick it over a magnetic field and you can see the flux lines?
Yeah.
The further away from the actual source that those flux lines get, it literally changes frequencies on the way out. And so the farther away, the frequency would be different than the actual device itself. While that energy is there and you have access to that frequency, you can run two separate frequencies side by side without ever even affecting or interacting with each other. And so when you transmit that energy and you turn it back into a usable source and then feed it back into the system, you just made it more efficient. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Well, and everything moves. Like I said, we live on a magnet, do we not?
Yes.
And so, I think, yeah, and I've always known since at a young age that magnets were going to be super important in the future.
In the future, there will be robots.
No, there won't be any robots.
There's a funny comment inside the chat room. I just got to read this out. Nobody is the name that they had it under. It says, I told a particle physicist once, show me a photo of an electron and I will take a selfie with the Prince of Peace. If you can understand the electron, then I can probably go visit the original hippie in person. Man, what people won't say these days. Either way, guys, it's just as simple as this, you know. Everything is a vibrational frequency. Nobody, not even the mainstream scientists, can deny that because you can measure frequency waves. You can measure disruptions in the field. And so with that said, every single vibration, every single sound wave or electrical wave or any disruption in that field is potential energy as far as I'm concerned. You know, if I throw a rock into a pond, I get a wave out there in the pond. Is that initial energy that I just put into that pond the same as the furthest wave out at the edge of that pond? Or did it change something in that environment at that particular given time, change that frequency? By the time it got to the other pond, it was totally different than the rock I just threw in. You see where I'm coming from?
Like you can feel a disturbance in the force, as they say?
Yeah. Either way, I affected everything in that pond just with that one rock.
With a disturbance.
It is said that if a butterfly flies from one tree to another in China, it has effect on the weather in Chicago.
Well, I don't doubt that in one little bit.
Either.
I don't doubt it at all. Anyway, you know, as far as building an energy device, I think it's as simple as learning different frequencies. So I'm actually getting hold of a really sensitive frequency scanner that has the capabilities of going from 1 hertz all the way up to 2-point-some-odd gigahertz. And so I can track down a whole lot. Can I track down everything with it? No, but I can track down a whole lot of frequencies. And
I think one of the... I kind of think the secret isn't necessarily in a device of any kind. It's in us. We have to learn to control frequency.
Well,
with ourselves, because we are frequency. Everything's frequency. We are frequency. We have an incredible ability to control frequency.
And I'm not disagreeing with
you.
Like
Steve was talking, you go down on one knee when you're following somebody. You can control frequency. And I don't know if we should be looking so much at devices or
well, here, as we stand right now, okay, right now all we have is tools, all right? Like back in the day, they used to have to do work the hard way with a horse and a plow. Now we use a combine and a tractor. But until we get to the point where we can control our minds enough to be able to tap into certain frequencies, right now I'll start cataloging with this device each specific frequency and its reaction, what it does, and that way, like the you got a book of frequencies out there for the radio community, which will tell you that I at this certain frequency I can communicate with you as long as you're on the same range, is the same thing I'm talking about, and so I can make measurements on when electrical appliances, and I can tell the actual range at which the interaction between the electron, if they believe that electron theory is true, that there is an electron that as it's being interacting, that's the specific frequency that it's doing it at. And so with that said, if I get the frequency of the copper atom itself, then I should be able to use a frequency to cause that interaction. Am I wrong?
Sure. I don't. You guys seem to keep jumping at the or attacking the electron here. You don't believe there's an electron?
I'm not saying I don't believe it. I'm saying there are disputing.
You've never seen one?
No, I've never seen one. I'm saying there are disputing views out there. Some people believe it exists. Some people don't believe it exists. I use it as a model because my theory. Listen,
electrons,
my theory
exists. In my opinion, electrons exist.
Well, and maybe they do.
There's quarks. You guys heard about quarks?
All right, but listen, hold on before you get too far. My theory applies regardless. My theory applies regardless of whether there's an electron or not. Like for either theory, it's all a disruption of a field, whatever you want to call it. If the electron exists, it only holds so much power, and it can only release so much power.
We're led to believe that the universe is infinite, and I think probably internally, like, it goes the other way. I mean, you can go in as far as you can go out.
Yeah, maybe you can go all the way in and into an alternate dimension as well.
Well, but and they call it, they say it's infinite, but I got my doubts. I think once you get to frequency, that's it. Then you can't go any further. That's
your point. What we're talking about is the movie Dune, because everything you've talked about, like Shazia said, talk about Buck Rogers in the early 1950s, the comic books, he fired a weapon that shot a beam of light. Well, we had lasers. Well, I don't know when the movie Dune was made, but it was back in the late 1900s. But in Dune, they had a device, and it was a weapon, not a weapon. They turned it into a weapon. It was created for mining, and all it did was you made certain sounds with your throat. You held the device in your hand, and it amplified that frequency, and you could actually destroy the rock, blow them apart, and they used mining purposes until they got attacked, and then they converted it to an actual weapon.
But before we ever had devices, I don't know if we had devices or not. I don't see evidence of it. But the natives, the aboriginals, look at some of the stuff they've done. Like even with their rain dances and their ceremonial things and the drum beating and that sort of stuff. They're playing the frequencies. They didn't even know what they were doing, but they were.
Well,
so they are. That's what they were up to.
And the Aboriginal is pretty exceptional. They even created an auto-gyrating sailplane called a boomerang That was more efficient of a hunting thing than anything else. And how can somebody who sleeps barefoot and naked on the forest floor come up with something that is Venturi curve and all of that?
Listen, guys. Until we actually get down to the point where we can talk a few monks into sitting around humming the specific frequency that it takes to run our electrical appliance, we're going to need some sort of device. And that's
Okay, all together now, let's practice.
I think all we did was aggravate people, but either way. We need some sort of Either way, we need some sort of physical device right now to be able to run our appliances. I'm saying that we are talking about redefining how energy is actually used, because we know that nature, everything in nature, is a vibrational frequency, a wave of some sort that is potential energy. And so if we can learn to capture this energy, redirect it, change
the frequency. Tesla had it all figured out.
Well, I agree, and I'm right there with you all along, but, as it stands, I want to be able to run my house, but I don't want to have to pay the man to do it. And so, in order for me to do that...
Well, stick it.
7 minutes.
You can pound a nail into a tree, stick a nail in the ground, run some wires from it, and guess what?
You get energy. Okay, but... We're burdened right now. We're burdened with the fact that your electric motor has to have 60 hertz in order to run. Does it actually have to have 60 hertz? I don't think so. But that's what the standard range is. Anything above 60 hertz.
Even talking with Larry Woods about his little generator thing.
Electrical generator, yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't everything have its own tiny little generator, like a battery, but... Instead of trying to be on a grid, every appliance that we have can have its own power supply, in a sense.
Well, what if you make little nanoparticles that can sit there literally and put their finger on an electron and rock it back and forth to get the energy released? So every individual electron would have its own specific generator.
Back to my idea of the power of the mind. Why can't I just look at the fridge and it gets cold?
Well, as soon as you figure that out, pass it out to the world.
Why can't I look at the coffee machine and it makes coffee?
In the meantime, since we're using Stone Age electricity, we need to have
Stone Age.
Yeah, so am I. But we're down to the last 6 minutes of the show. Go ahead, Steve.
If you say what 3,000 times, can you boil the kettle?
We could try.
It's about 3 kilowatts is the average kettle used to heat water.
It'd be interesting to get a whole bunch of people together and see what we could do with the mind if everybody tried hard enough.
Here's an experiment for you guys to try. Get about 10 people together and some thermometers, and have people with a glass of water in front of them, and Sanders scream inside that glass of water and see how many different temperature differences you're coming out. There'll be factors in there like the temperature of somebody's breath or the vibration that's coming out of their mouth, the decibel level or whatever. But either way, I would submit that each one of those glasses should have a slightly different temperature range.
Well, I'm going to tell you a story from this guy. So I was in the church choir for about 4 years, and the voices of 12 young men in an acoustic chamber can bring tears to the eyes of hundreds of people.
Yes.
Yeah, and somebody who can't sing with a doggone probably bring tears to your eyes even quicker.
No, that's blood for the ears, mate. But if you take 1,000 of those young people and you put them in a place like Canterbury Cathedral, and you get them all to sing in unison, then you can get people to believe anything you tell them.
Put the dog
up. I guess what we really have to realize is we are the power, and we better get hold of it
Well, if you put a whole bunch of piezoelectrics on the ceilings and the walls of that cathedral, would you not get some energy released from the sound wave generated?
Lord, heck yeah.
So,
harmonics have been used for centuries. We just need to find a way of tapping into it to make it beneficial to our particular cause.
Well, I'm right there with you. And so with that said, I'm going to get my frequency detector slash whatever. It's going to basically help me to, you know, use what we got right now to try and
We have positive mental attitude. We can be positive. Even it's like ye, though I walk through the valley of death, you know what I mean? We really have to realize our ability to control our surroundings and the ability to be.
I agree, but until that point, until people become enlightened enough to use their brain at its full potential, we're still going to need some sort of device, and that's what we're working on to try to generate a free energy device that nobody has to pay an electric bill. I know the energy's there. Your own laws of physics say so. And so with that said, we're down to the last 3 minutes of the show. So if everybody wants to go around and give somebody their YouTube channel, try to do it quickly because we're running out of time.
Let me go first and I'll be done. If everything vibrates and you can do it just by a feather push to amplify it, I think everybody should love. Enough said. Muddy, Muddy, Mud Man on YouTube.
I can't argue with that. Love.
2 minutes.
Love is the ultimate vibration that we have to strive for.
Yep. Amen.
I agree. What about you, Steve?
If anybody knows the harmonic frequency by touching bread with a feather and turning it into beer, please let me know.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Steve. Yeah.
And Raymond?
Well, I'm got him back with Pocket Fuzz there when he went I get them in person and the two of us work together because we both have a deep voice, and I think if we got our harmonics together and then put it through an amplifier, we could do some stuff. That man.
Well, either way, we're talking about disruptions in the field and we're talking about energy. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and roll up out of here. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Shaziz Mad Science. I hope you learned something and hope it's beneficial for you. Take care.
Can you hear me? Give my creation
life! Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.